This is American Fashion Podcast. I'm Charles Beckwith. Kathy Sheppes is off this week, but Lois Herzika is here, and Lois is the author of the book, Fashion, Law, and Business, and you've heard her on this show before. And our guest in the studio is Tito Chowdhury, who is the executive in charge of Portland Fashion Next. Hi, Tito. How are you?
Good. How are you? It is always good to be with the familiar faces and the wonderful people in the New York fashion industry here with you and, of course, Lois.
Tito, you're here for New York Fashion Week, but you have your own Fashion Week in Portland, Oregon. Can you tell us, you got started doing the shows, or you got started creating an incubator, or you got started helping people with technology? Where'd all this stuff come from, and what are you doing?
I think that is a very interesting question. The way I got started actually from a very unique space, I was still working at Intel in a very different field when I was a board member of some of the art and culture organizations.
And you're an engineer, right?
I was an engineer. And I saw the power of a collective entity like Portland Art Museum, where I was a board member of the Young Patrons. And I saw something like that missing in Portland, but in most of the country, for fashion designers. And so I wanted to create a collective platform, an organization that helps the fashion side of the creatives from developing the talents, developing the patrons, develop the ecosystem. And from that mindset, of course, show and right after the accelerators, incubators, those things are some of the first thing that I got started with.
Now, the Portland area of Oregon and then over in Pendleton, you have a lot of fashion up there, a lot of manufacturing and design companies. There's a lot of athletic wear that's designed there. What are some of the companies that are in your area?
Yeah, and I think that, as you probably know from the history, that area indeed was the home for some of the quintessential American brands like Pendleton started there, as well as Jensen started there, and successively like Nike started there, and then Columbia Sportswear. Of course, Adidas's US in North American headquarters is there. And so Portland's history of being the home for a lot of, and it is in the sentiment and in the DNA of Portland, is about makers movement, and of course a deep rooted sensibility of attachment to the ground, you know, to the soil, and a lot of this really played in a very exciting way and interesting way for having a really strong history of apparel, footwear, as it is today also.
So you've been running fashion shows, and you're here in New York to meet with designers to take back to Portland to show, right?
So here I, of course, meet with designers, and I meet with the industry folks, and very importantly, to get a more updated sense every year in what's going on in America's fashion capital. And for designers, yeah, we show designers from all over the world, and we reach out to them where they are. And so here I am at a time when there is such a high concentration of fashion designers as well as the fashion industry here.
So in New York, during New York Fashion Week, there's a high concentration of press and there's a lot of amplification of brand messaging. When people do a runway show or a presentation or an event, it kind of helps you get out there. If someone does a runway show in Portland, what do they get out of doing that show? Is it just local people who want to see a fashion show, or do you have industry people come?
It's a good question that, like, what a designer, when they're showing in Fashion Next in Portland, get out of showing at Fashion Next. So there are like few very specific things that we pay very close attention to, because in the modern era, as has been for some time, connection directly to the consumers becomes a very important part. Creating great content through for use in the online space, for whether it's Instagram, whether it's before that blogs, and all of that becomes a very important part. So one of the things that we pay very close attention to is the production quality of the show itself. Number one.
I've seen your shows online. You have higher production quality than a lot of shows here in New York City. And people come to New York Fashion Week to show and create that social media content they can use to sell their clothing. And they spend a lot of money here. And it seems like if they went with your group in Portland, it's a lot cheaper to show there. And they still get the same effect. I mean, it's not about the people who are in the room when you're doing it for those reasons. So that seems like an advantage for you.
And that has been a tremendous advantage for us. And that's why we have been seeing more and more designers who already show from all over the country and internationally come back. And as you mentioned about the price, but that is also about the effectiveness of the time, because we create a full service production. Full service, it is not like, okay, you put on a show and then you have to go out and find your own models and own hair and makeup and all those kind of things. So it is a one-stop shopping under one umbrella. We use a very good use of technology to interact with the designers so that it is such a smooth experience. A lot of times our designers just come for one day. And that is unheard of if there's somebody who's trying to show in New York Fashion Week or any other fashion shows out there, that how smooth operation, and that helps the designers, because time is money for this. A lot of this, especially the independent designers or smaller brands, they don't have a lot of manpower to handle all those kind of things, where we are handling all of that for them.
So you've got the dressers, the stylists, the hair and makeup, all that's taken care of.
All of that.
That's advantageous, I think.
That's tremendous.
Although I would not advise to a designer to show up the day before your show and not be prepared. Like, you got to, you know. Even if Tito's saying you can show up and one just be there for one day, you should be there for more than one day. You should also go to all the other shows because you learn something from other designers.
Very much so. And as they do, because it's a four-day event. And obviously, a lot of times they are there to take advantage of the sales opportunity, because we have an exhibit space as well as a runway show space. So exhibit space, you can be there all 4 days. So some of them are present there to interact with other people.
So are they selling direct to consumers in the exhibit space?
They are selling direct to the consumers from there.
So it's not a showroom thing. It's a retail.
It is a retail opportunity. But also remember the fact that, like, it is a mix of industry and general public attendance and industry attendance. So being there all 4 days in the exhibit space helps them network. A lot of the boutique owners and the buyers, they can come some other day, because it helps them schedule-wise also, that some other day they're coming there because they could not come to their show and all of that.
Yeah.
So what's unique about Portland Fashion Week? Is there something thematically, or is there a connection to sustainability? What characterizes Portland Fashion Week?
The show that specifically that we are representing is the official Fashion Week of Portland, and we call it Fashion Next Week to distinguish us from anything else that are going on. So at the Fashion Next Week, the distinguing factor is the fact that, like, one, it is a very high concentration of end consumers that are target demography for them, okay? It is about high quality of show staging that creates this, like, amazing content for them, as well as our own own media outlets and all of that, bringing in those on the venue as well as the outreach effort. And also, we have a very unique messaging. We call it experience what's next in fashion. whether it is the curated set of designers that are showing their next collections, but also it could be what's next in technology, what's next in sustainability.
So you focus on innovation?
We focus very much on the innovation. We worked with companies like SolarWorld, America's largest solar panel manufacturer, to present the runway collections on the world's first solar panel runway. We worked with Intel.
Really? So the solar, explain that a little bit. That sounds interesting.
That is very interesting. So SolarWorld came to us to create a campaign that combines the fact that, like, it is a sustainable lifestyle choice. Several years ago, when they were struggling to sell beyond commercial, they were because they wanted to reach the end consumer and to get on the house rooftop. So, who is the decision maker? What goes on the rooftop? It is not the man in the household. And
now you're speaking my language,
right? And so, what is a great way to reach them than fashion? And so we came up with a campaign called Solar is the New Black. They launched their black solar panels because traditional solar panels are not that. So from Fashion Next, and we created a solar concept collection by licensing a Project Runway winning designer. So they all of them came together with the messaging that sustainable lifestyle is about fashion. It is about solar panels, solar energy use, and all of that.
That's really interesting. I like that combination of sustainability and solar and fashion.
And as a matter of fact, when Time Magazine a few years ago wrote about all the other fashion weeks outside of New York City, they put our show as number one, and they specifically mentioned those kind of things that you also it got your attention as well.
Excellent.
You're also doing some incubation and acceleration of companies and brands. Have many of them come out of that program already? I think you've been running it for a while, right?
We have been doing it for quite a few years. And the goal really is to help the emerging designers who know how to make collections. In our accelerator, we call it Up Next. But help them with some of the most common issues that they face. And we decide on what are those challenging topics could be for them, and we update it every year. And then bring in the masters of that field to give them something like what they don't know kind of thing. It is, and because of the limitation of resources and all of that, prevents us from going all out in a very serious way of office space or a huge amount of funding and those kind of things. Rather, this is about helping them with the knowledge and nowhere to go for the resources. Yes, there are some prize money for help them buy fabric for the next collections. Yes, offering the winner a free complimentary show that we produce for them. But a big part of that program is about this 10 or so learning sessions, mentorship sessions with 10 or so masters of the industry on different topics, whether it is how to decide where to show. That decision making becomes a big part that makes or break a lot of designers. When they're ready for show, where they're going to show, and what kind of format they are going to be using to create those things. Or how to get a store account, how to fulfill that, because there are some very, very deep knowledge that we see are very common mistakes a lot of the designers do at the earlier stage of their business that just prevents them, or just the stores don't carry them after one season because they did not do this process right, you know?
What's the biggest mistake you see?
What is some of the, you'll be surprised that the kind of things that they do, because we take feedback from the store owners, retail owners also, and sometimes it could be about the hang tag is not proper. With proper care instructions and things like that. because such a small volume, it can get expensive, and sometimes. This is funny, but at the same time, when you're the store owner, it is not funny. That designers a lot of times making the samples or smaller run, they use that say for a photo shoot or fashion show, and from that they bring it to the store to sell, and they have sometimes lipstick, sometimes BO. Literally, it happens more often than you think. And just keeping them aware that those kind of things, and sometimes they're coming to the back to the store after they are selling their thing to pull back some of that to do some another photo shoots and things like that, right? And that means, I mean, that's kind of interruption of a store that has to be a smooth selling machine.
Right, and so it's a very important service that you provide by helping to teach designers that there are mistakes that you can make and you can avoid it easily by thinking about it in advance and thinking through the whole process and getting the advice of experts. So that's a tremendous service.
It is. And those are just like two of the things that like there are other ways like how to create a brand or how to think originally about design, like one of the global design directors from Nike helps them learn about innovative thinking, because at the earlier stage you have to be thinking about how to stay fresh and new, like down the road, you know. And but also there are like media, like helping with the like how to get attention from media. A lot of times designers don't know that. Like we bring in a decision maker in a media outlet, major media outlet, to tell them, okay, this is how you should be writing the press release, or this is how you should be reaching out to me with this kind of information, not that kind of information, because this is we respond better to when we decide to write a feature or to do a TV shoot. And so it is something like just most serious topics that we see like designers face early on. That's why we kind of like, as I was saying, like even sometimes we have seen earlier stages, they are like struggling with coming up with the money to buy fabrics or putting on a next show and things like that. So we kind of like added that to this thing so that there is least amount of effort for them for that year to take them to the next level.
So you give them fundraising advice as well.
We not only give the fundraising advice for the winner, we offer them prize money for the fabric. We offer them, of course, the how to like take it to the market, and helping them with all the way to the show to so that there is least amount of perturbation for them to take their business to the next level.
So being on the West Coast and fairly close to California, you must get some interaction from San Francisco and Silicon Valley and that whole tech community. You probably have better access to that than we have here in New York. Do those companies come up and interact with your incubator and your accelerator?
So, yes, and it is very interesting that you mentioned that, because sensibility towards technology and how people take fashion and how people take the two together is unique than what is happening on the East Coast, especially in New York. So we have been participated, as well as there are very exciting collaboration that happened between us and Silicon Valley companies, including Intel. All the way to like small startups. For example, we, of any major fashion shows anywhere in America, did the world's first technology activation as a part of a fashion show. And that we did with Intel. Now everybody knows Magic Mirror. We activated, and at that time there was no Magic Mirror, so to speak. We are talking about 2011.
Well, for people who don't know, what is Magic Mirror?
So I'll tell you with the overall context. At that time, Intel wanted to showcase that, okay, how do we do an activation in a fashion show of a brand that really doesn't have a retail product, you know? So, but they create, they were creating software and retail solutions at that time on one hand. So a magic mirror we incorporated, it was a 4 feet by 8 feet big interactive TV screen.
That's bigger than a door. That's a big, big TV screen.
It is pretty
screen.
Big. So for because it is...
So it's a TV screen, not a mirror.
It is a TV screen.
Okay.
It's not a mirror. And where a video camera literally is showing you when you're standing in front of it on the screen. And it's interactive. So you touch a outfit. So they worked with a few of the local retailers and designers. And it showed how you would look in that outfit and how you change in an outfit.
Okay.
You know?
So it's like it's an overlay of the clothing on your body on the video screen.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That is.
This is now available in stores also.
Now, successively, it is now available in the store. So that's just like our first work with them. And successively, those kind of engagement with technology has become a lot more deep and exciting. Like when Intel wanted to launch with their partners, personal cloud. And again, we're talking about like 2012-13. People didn't even know what, in a real way, like what really cloud and what really personal cloud is. And so our campaign with them is to show people what really like cloud is. What we did is like we worked with two of the Project Runway winning designers to create a collection that visually represents what really cloud means.
Which designers?
So it is Victor Luna from New York and Seth Aaron from Portland. And so they launched that, they showed that collection on the runway. We did a video campaign which helped people understand how and why you should have your data on your desktop, not like out somewhere, because it creates good control of your data and safe and all of that.
Yeah, a lot of my hacker friends refer to the cloud as the clown. So if you're thinking about protecting your data by storing it in the cloud, you can also think of it as protecting your data by storing it in the clown. And that doesn't make sense. So don't do that.
Right.
It's interesting that the capabilities that these new technologies are giving us but also it's interesting how far back they go. Like,
correct.
I was watching a video of a Casio watch, I think from 1983, that had gesture controls. It was bizarre. I don't know how they did it. It was like a calculator watch on on a like a watch face with hands, mm-hmm. and you could do math on it. It was very, very strange, and I had no idea that kind of technology had existed before even the 90s. 1983, it was crazy.
They were, and as a matter of fact, your mention of gesture reminded me of another technology activation with a smaller company from Silicon Valley. Is called Brilliant Service. And they came up with a gesture control smart eyewear. So it is eyewear, and people have to accept it. So they came to us to help them like reach the audience. Because they were before that just going for demos of the techies in the Silicon Valley. So we did a live activation on the runway with another Project Runway winner. I know you are hearing a lot of Project Runway because Portland has the highest number of Project Runway winners of any city.
Is that right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's like 5 or 6 title holders of these 17 sessions, so 17 or 18 seasons they have, yeah.
To what do you attribute that? That's such an interesting fact.
And I will get to that question. That is a very interesting fact as soon as I finish the smart eyewear thing. So on live runway, we showed it's a complicated process. We had to take the signal from the smart eyewear through the computer on the projection screen so the live audience can see that it can understand the hand gestures and you can control the screen, control your eyewear.
So was the audience wearing eyeglasses?
No, the one of the Project Runway winners,
okay.
Michelle Lesniak, she did the live demo.
Okay.
For the people to see on the live screen.
So is there a screen that way they can see what it does.
Yeah.
She sees something in the glasses, and you were also showing what she was seeing.
Correct. And what she is controlling, how the screen is functioning, in a very short session, and it was fashion related content, you know, so that that audience can easily understand. Okay, this is what it does. I get it. You know, it's a captivated audience on a runway, so we take advantage of that to communicate the technology message or how a new technology functions that is interesting to them.
Now, I always wonder about this, but was it awkward to go from doing a runway show to doing this demonstration? Because I always tell people never show a video at a fashion show unless it's playing while the models are walking. Like, you never start a runway show by showing people a video. It's just an absurd act and no one should do that.
Correct. And it is a very good point. When you are people are coming there just to see one designer show, as it is in New York, so it is harder for them to show other things. But the way Fashion Next has designed is because it is designed for a more broader audience. We show, like, the programming is like several designers, so there are like gaps in between.
So it's like a collective show.
It's a collective show, and also. We recognize that, like, that is the audience who are not just making decision about what they're going to wear, but they're also making decision about the lifestyle, what eyeglass to wear. And that is, we are showing that part, that whether it's a technology activation, just like a smart eyewear is about future of fashion.
And is this now a consumer product that people can buy, or is it still R&D kind of?
That has been a very difficult area because, as you saw, Google Glass failed.
Spectacularly.
Because consumer, it is a tough area. So things are from that era. We are talking about 2012. Successively, it has become more of a prosumer product than a consumer product. People are using it for interior design. People are using it for medical use of, like, live seeing and gesture control when you want to keep your hands free. And,
yeah, don't wear it while you're eating lunch.
Correct. And Loris, you had a question.
Oh yeah, I just wondered why so many Project Runway winners have come from the Portland area.
It is. Very enigmatic question. Even Project Runway winners from other cities, like, wonder. I was in a gathering of them, and they were like, what's going on in Portland? Why there are, like, even they wonder. And I would give you the answer that what they thought was unique of their fellow contestants that they saw from Portland. Portland designers are very good tailors. They are very good in constructions. Where fashion designers, a lot of times from other cities, try to, especially media centers like New York and LA, they are more about marketer.
I see.
Less about the product. They are very much about, you will see, like, they bear, a lot of times, designers from these cities, they just, like, get booted out from the show within 3 or 4 sessions. But the way they market themselves, as if they are the winner. Whereas Portlanders, they are winners, they're just, like, staying humble and, like, talking very less about how they big they are or how you don't know from their conversation earlier on before seeing the show all the way that they actually have won. So that's kind of, like, good and bad in a way, because fashion is more and more about so much
marketing.
About engaging with the audience. But at the same time, as you can imagine, you really, more and more people in the fashion space would be looking for higher quality product when they don't want to buy online.
So it's about the craft.
It is about the craft. It's about the craft and the seriousness of the craft. That is in the DNA. And they also know that, like, that is their biggest friend. That's what they have to win over the world, because they are not in New York City that, like, they are friends with, they have drinks with, like, newspaper editors, and where they will be cutting them slack in talking about stories what really is not worth writing yet. But in New York, you get a lot of those. But in Portland, you really have to have a really good story to tell for getting attention from the media.
So it's the craft, it's the technology.
Yeah.
And that's a part of the casting process for Project Runway, is that they look at what you've made. So you have to come with some game.
You have to come with game, but those are, at the end of the day, they are also making a TV show. So there, yeah. I am somewhat familiar by knowing a lot of these designers and how what process they go through. With that, those are TV shows. They are not necessarily about fashion designers through and through. It is about they are there to make a TV show. So a lot of times it's not about the craft that they're looking at. They are looking at who will make good TV.
Now, I'm a huge fan of Tim Gunn, but I have heard negative things from the designers who participated in Project Runway, particularly in kind of the middle seasons. I understand they're doing kind of a relaunch now with new judges, and it's a whole new thing. I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do with it now.
It is, and they're like three different ways they are proceeding, because original Project Runway gone from the Lifetime to Bravo back, and there they got a completely new set of judges like Christian Siriano and Carly Kloss being part of that. And then the people who were the face of original Project Runway, Tim Gunn and Heidi Klum, they got into a new TV show that is coming out of Amazon Prime. And so that would be another interest. They are saying that like they would, it would be more about the sales, because as you can imagine, Amazon Prime is all about pushing product. So so would they be successful in selling products? Because as you probably remember, like about 5-7 years ago, NBC came up with a like direct to sale kind of like fashion product, which is kind of
The Fashion Star or something.
That didn't last very long.
And also the Project Runway Fashion Startup show that had Gary Wassner and Rebecca Minkoff as the judges, and the what's the service where you get a box of things? I forget.
Amazon Prime.
Well, no, not that one.
Stitch Fix.
No, it wasn't. Something Box, but the founder of that was one of the judges. But Birchbox. I think that was it. But they were having designers come in, and they were looking at whether they would invest in them. So it was like a Shark Tank version of Project Runway.
Mm-hmm.
And
they didn't
invest in anything.
They kept saying no.
Again.
Isn't the Oxygen Channel? I think it's they did the Vogue Fashion Fund.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's the name of the show, Fashion Fund. It did not really go, did not really get much publicity and all of that.
But the Project Runway Fashion Startup, the judges were so tough, they didn't say yes to anything. I mean, the only person who really got something out of it was the woman who started Fab Scrap, and Gary got her to turn her for-profit company into a non-profit, and now it's wildly successful. So that's something wonderful that came out of that kind of failed TV show. But it was depressing to watch because nobody was winning.
Yeah, we want all winners.
Yeah. And also for the new Project Runway that's coming up, 19th Amendment, the fashion tech startup that does manufacturing backbone for designers, they're going to actually be producing things from the collections on the show. So that stuff will be, I think it may be a see now, buy now kind of thing when the shows air.
And hopefully they really pay attention or promote that unlike before, because back in the days also, you could really buy the things that you see on the runway in the Project Runway TV show. But I don't know whether that was very successful, because
they didn't do a good job with the e-commerce for that. They made it available at some point, and it wasn't pushed, I think.
It was not, and that's what I'm saying, like that the challenge of these TV shows are they are just shows.
Yeah.
And they have more potential to push the designers' businesses or helping even the consumers get educated more about how to become patrons of these designers, not just the patron of the show, you know?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of gap of resources that is there to be taken advantage of.
So
from your perspective, what are some trends that you see lately of things that are changing in fashion?
Of course, I mean, like, as you could see, the biggest one is how people are making their fashion decisions. And
the consumers, you mean?
Consumers. Yeah. That's number one. Like, the way people used to be making fashion decisions where there is a launch fashion show, fashion collection, media editor sitting there, and it is very top down, and they're kind of like writing about it and talking about it, but sometimes they're not even coming up till the next issue or next season and all the kind of things. And yeah, people have nowhere to know that.
The gatekeepers saw it first. Correct. They got 6 months to think about it and then told the consumers.
Right. And so consumers are a lot more empowered now because they are seeing the pieces being launched before the last model leaves the runway from the show through the posting of the from the live on the runway.
A lot of the editors are sitting home on their couches and watching the shows on their laptops.
Correct. And so that is creating some good and bad effects on like how people are the relationship between people and fashion. I'm seeing in the most recent time, it has come up with a very negative result because with the millennials, because their experience with fashion through some influencers who themselves are not necessarily fashion experts. They are just expert in creating fancy pictures and experts in disseminating their pictures through hashtags. You know, so to the consumers who are following them, that's the reality.
Yeah.
So that bigger distance between the consumers and the fashion designers as a craft, as a product itself, through being diluted through this two by two screen, is really bad for the fashion designers and the fashion media as a whole.
Yeah, it doesn't promote talent. It really doesn't.
It doesn't promote talent. It doesn't promote the relationship with the product itself.
Yeah. And with the brand, right? Because now your relationship isn't with the brand. It's with the influencer.
Correct. So, but influencers is because they are a bunch of freelancers. They are good. They are bad. And they are not where they are by being better in their job of talking about like the understanding the fashion. They are good at like creating huge followers and feeding them with information that not necessarily about the brand, it's about themselves.
Yeah.
And that is that need to be changed in the fact that like influencers need to be helped with more knowledge, more awareness. So that's what, along with all the fashion show and the incubators, accelerators that we do, we also last year started sessions with influencers. We brought 40 or 50 of them in the room and talked to them about the designers. Brought them designers in the room. Just exclusive sessions with them.
Yeah.
Because if we lose them, we are losing their followers. And their followers are the ones that are buying the product. Yeah. And speaking of quickly that, like while we were talking about the incubators and accelerators, so our incubators, we are teaching way more of just fashion designers. We have incubators for the fashion like stylist. We have incubators for fashion events producer. We have incubator for fashion show, the photographers, and all of this kind of stuff. But coming back to our original
point, you're doing a lot of incubation.
We are doing a lot of incubation.
And education.
And education.
The whole fashion ecosystem.
And the fashion experience ecosystem, I say it, you know.
So you're really fulfilling a lot of needs in the Portland area for people who want to be part of this business.
And beyond, because we have people coming from other cities participating in those. Like we had people coming from Midwest, people coming from Seattle, people coming from, of course, from California, all the way to Vancouver, BC, we have seen participation from those kind of cities because everybody wants to do fashion shows in this, and all the marketers and all the marketing people, all the kind of things, but nobody want to participate in the growth of these talents. And that is a something that we have been trying to address, that, as I say, if we rely on the water downstream, we have to take care of the mountain. And that's where, like, we are going after through a lot of different kind of relationships so that the talent pool knows us as a resource to help them to the next level. But about your earlier point about what are the trends that I'm seeing that is different. One is, of course, as I said, how people's experience with the brand. The next thing is, like, how also... like technology is playing a role, not only just through the social media, but also retail decisions, the way it is changing. Like not just how the online shopping is changing the game, but also how the retailers and different brands are reacting to it to survive, to stay relevant. Brick and mortar cannot be just about a point of sales. Because you have a point of sales device in your computer, you know. So all the different innovation that is happening in that space, or at the same time, not enough is happening. You know, it is such a slow moving industry, and so that's where last year, lot is in the software space. So that brick and mortar can still take advantage of some of the digital experiences and all of that.
I was at the NRF trade show here, the big show, and there was a lot of noise. I met with some interesting people. We had interesting conversations. They were in a previous episode. But there were so many people selling the same services over and over and over. It was, you know, dozens and dozens of booths of just people selling the same slightly different version with a different brand name on it of different things for retailers to do in their stores. And it felt like the event innovation had happened and these were just people trying to exploit the opportunity to sell these things. And not that many of them had real experience with retail. It was interesting to see because the NRF event, the trade show, seemed to have kind of exploded. It was much larger than before, but I don't think the quality was the same of the vendors and what they're providing. So it's a bit of a bear trap minefield for people who are investing those technologies that they need to. I mean, retailers have to evolve. Brick and mortar has to evolve. You have to be able to have your e-commerce and your in-store experience merge. If you don't, it is strange now. People think you're weird if they walk into your shop and your website is different from your store.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the gap that you saw between technology side of it, that people who are developing technology, they have such a huge knowledge gap on fashion. On the other hand, people who are running fashion, they have such a knowledge gap in technology. That has been, I saw that even at Consumer Electronics Show CES, you know. That is one of the reasons I feel that, like, Apple still is struggling to create ecosystem with their wearable side of it. That's why I feel that, like, Intel really could not push it way further than after a couple of years of wearable smart bracelets and things like that.
These people should call the two of us more often because you and I are people who understand both fashion and technology.
Correct.
And I don't think we don't get tapped enough for these questions before people make the major investments.
Right. And that's also because of the fact that, like, because they are seeing from outside in, they are going to the traditional players in these industries, you know.
So and there's a lot of hustlers in these industries. There's a lot of people who will sell you something.
Correct. And that's exactly what is happening. For example, they're coming to the traditional PR companies in New York who did not have to be innovative because they have a chokehold on the everything that is going on in the fashion space, on experiential space, you know?
This is so bizarre. We have this Be a Guest form on our website for American Fashion Podcast. And I have very clear instructions on the page. And one specifically relates to PR pitches about female founders of companies. Because in fashion, you have wonderful female CEOs and founders of so many brands. In tech, it's rare. But we get all these proposals from West Coast PR companies saying that the only thing they put in the pitch about why this person should be on the show is that they're a female founder. And I'm like, well, what are they making? What's the product? What's their philosophy for clothing? Where's the substance to this? And it drives me crazy because people just copy and paste into the form a block of text about the brand, and there's nothing about why this is a brand. It's just, we have a female founder, you should interview her, with nothing else. And it upsets me because there are so many people in this business that are leading companies who are women, and these publicists dismiss that they're there. It's like, oh, this is a really rare female footwear brand founder. And I'm like, that's not rare. This isn't Silicon Valley. You know, women are leading this industry.
And as you can see that, like, there are this cross-pollination of different sides of brains, whether it is like technology and fashion, whether it is the female side of decision making, that has not been part of a lot of these company decision makings. So now and these PR companies, so a lot of times they take advantage of the gimmicks, you know, as you saw in the sustainability, people are just like coming with whatever, all these sorts of ways, you know. Now it is the women, you know, it's like they're just like more about mooching off of the movement or what sells as a easy pitch.
Yeah, it's not
than
authentic.
Really solving the problem.
It's not authentic. It's not helpful at all.
Yeah.
When they take the cause and use it to sell, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
It's also been very hard for fashion tech companies to get VC investment because there are VCs that invest in fashion and VCs that invest in tech. But it's like never the twain shall meet.
The female founders of fashion tech companies have a tremendous difficulty getting funding. And thankfully, Spring, which is runs the New York Fashion Tech Lab, they promote female founders and they fund female founded companies, which is helpful.
And that's so important.
Yeah, although I wish they weren't completely exclusive. I wish they wouldn't. You know, I'm a humanist. I don't like rules that say you can't be in this club if you are one gender or the other. That's alien to me. But I like that they're helping people who wouldn't otherwise be able to get that. That's wonderful.
It is. And I think that, like, if there are, like, few good exits, that's when, like, the people who are making money off of those things, they hopefully will fund more of those kind of companies, you know. Like, because fashion tech is such a unique space, and it is a new space, and a lot of times it just, like, defies the traditional sense that VCs function. Their math doesn't necessarily work in this industry. And that's why, as I said, I mean, like, even the big players, like, dropped out or are not being successful. I mean, Google could not do much in this field, and Apple, as I saw, and Intel, as you saw. I mean, like, they are just all of them. I feel that, like, it is that huge knowledge gap, you know, that is causing a lot of those issues, and because this company's DNA is different.
Lois, what's your perspective on all this, on the startups? You've seen a lot of startup proposals, I'm sure.
Yeah. So what I think is interesting is how the sharing economy has come to fashion. So not only is it Rent the Runway, but now Rent the Runway has subscription models. And not only is it Rent the Runway subscription models, but you have sharing companies that share from your closet. So you can rent clothes now from your closet. There are a couple of companies that do that. So I'm interested to see how that sharing economy impacts the fashion design business going forward.
Are you participating in it yourself? Have you tried those things?
Sure. But I think it's focused more on the millennial generation. And I think the new Rent the Runway subscription model for working clothes has been particularly successful because, if you're a woman and you have a career and sometimes you have a family too, it's harder and harder to shop for your work clothes. So that's where you get the Stitch Fix, but you also can get the Runway subscription model. So I think, that's a really interesting angle. But again, as the sharing economy in fashion continues to grow, what does that mean for new fashion designers coming up with new brands who can't access that subscription model?
Well, we don't need to make new things. It's actually pretty damaging to the world, but we're going to figure this out. We're going to get through it. Keep making beautiful, wonderful things, and we'll figure out the rest of it. I mean, we have
exactly
a sustainability problem, but this requires engineering. It doesn't require not making new things, not making interesting things, and not progressing. I mean,
that's the great challenge.
Yeah. You can't just stop making clothes and stop your business because it's somebody else already made some clothes that people aren't actually wearing. Just keep going, and we're going to figure it out. But support the people who are trying to figure it out. We've got to put more resources into the research and making the change. I mean, this thing where they've got this big net in the Pacific Ocean and they're grabbing the plastic and then they're bringing it in and turning it into pellets and recycling it, and the things they're doing with the like Rothy's is turning plastic water bottles into synthetic fibers that they're weaving into shoes. I mean, all this stuff is great. And they just found, I think, scientists in Ireland maybe or somewhere in England, they found bacteria in a landfill that was eating plastic. They finally found bacteria that eats plastic. This is wonderful. I mean, we've got so many advances coming. We've got people making leather out of algae and growing it from other materials and substrates. And when that stuff's here, it's going to be wonderful and it's going to be really helpful. And I hope people embrace it.
Creating more awareness becomes an important part. And fashion still has been so much controlled by the, as I said, the traditional PR companies are not making it. It doesn't serve the interest. And a lot of time, traditional brands also. They are still selling fashion in such a glossy way. People's fashion experience in the Western world starts on the store window or in a glossy magazine page and of such. They have no relationship or understanding how it is being made. You know, just like the food, you have to understand where your food comes from for you to really make a solid decision. I think people need to also understand where their clothing comes from, how it is being made. And that is, I feel, intentional knowledge barrier the traditional magazines and traditional PR companies are creating for people.
You're absolutely right. I love your background, the combination of technology and fashion. I mean, it's perfect for the current environment, right?
Yes. And
who would have thought? Did you think when you started getting your electrical engineering degrees?
No. As I was saying later, it was like when I was involved with the art and culture community because of my natural inclination of like looking beautiful things and being supportive of things like fundraising and all of that, becoming a volunteer board member for art and culture organizations, including the art museum and all of that. And so it is, that's when I really paid attention to what goes on in the fashion space, and saw that like they're missing a huge part of it. So it's kind of like, for me, it was extended, okay, I'm supporting art organizations, might as well like help them and in a more, with a more control on me, because now I own the organization, but use some of the same techniques of the how people react I interact with the art, and how fundraisings happen to create those things, how friend raising happens for the art. So I applied some of the same techniques here. So my background in technology side of it where comes really useful in the fashion industry, which is very opposite even the kind of people.
Absolutely, right.
Like they are a lot more emotional. They are a lot more kind of like last minute decision maker, you know. Whereas my background, corporate background in technology, it doesn't fly. You have to have plans. You have to have level headedness, and you have to have results orientation. Those kind of things I bring in into the fashion space. So it just.
It's a good combination because you need the creativity and the inspiration, but you also need the planning, the process, the technology.
Yes, and that is actually, I feel, one of the biggest differentiating factor, which kept us going and not only staying afloat, but also our growth. Whereas in this during the same amount of space, you'll see a lot of the other fashion entities have gone down. Because they could not stay fresh. They were trying to crank or emulate the same model that somebody else already came up with, and they were just trying to do it in a copycat way or in a kind of like a way they're just undercutting who has done it before them, and that did not last. As a matter of fact, that is one of the biggest concerns I see in current form of New York Fashion Week. Every year there's like another new company trying to come up with another fashion week, but not offering anything new except, oh yeah, like we'll give you a fast show in New York Fashion Week. They're selling the city, but not selling any new service.
That's very true.
I want to give a quick shout out here to Mike Kaback. If you are coming from out of New York City and you want to know about the Garment District and the factories here and all of the things that are available in the Garment Center, Mike actually gives tours, free walking tours of the Garment Center a couple of days out of the year. There's a schedule on the garmentdistrict.nyc website, but you can also book a private tour with him. And mikesnyctours.com is the website. You can email him and tell him what you're looking for. Like if you're a swimwear designer, or you're interested in making shoes, and or you know, if you're interested in doing different things, tell Mike before you come on the tour, and he can schedule with factories to go through the different factories and introduce you to people. Mikeswalkingtours.com. Check that out before you come to New York if you're in the fashion business and you want to know more about the fashion business here. So, Tito, Fashion Next Week is October 2 to 5, 2019.
Correct.
You do usually do it in October?
Yes. It is in the fashion calendar, right, between Paris Fashion Week and LA Fashion Week.
Great. And how do people apply? Is the application process open year-round, or do you, yeah, you start at a certain point?
No, our fashionnext.com is our website, and you'll see the application very easily online space. People can sign up there, and we do the curation when there are like standard brands, standard designer shows and stuff like that. We have a curation process there. On the other hand, if somebody is participating in the accelerator, we have an audition process, and we, for the incubators, we like schedule mentorship sessions in generally during the summertime.
Wonderful. All right. So it's fashionxt.com. So the N is capitalized in fashion. So it's NXT, fashion NXT.
Fashion XT.
Yeah. Fashionxt.com is the website. Follow Tito on Instagram and LinkedIn and connect. And if you're interested in doing a show that's maybe a little better for setting up your e-commerce than just doing a show for your ego. He might be the person to talk to. Tito, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you. And definitely we have been trying to add new solutions to the existing problems that designers face and the technology companies. We have an agency service throughout the year so that people are not just like waiting for the show services and related incubators and accelerators, but also agency service. If somebody wants to create a brand collaboration, if somebody wants to campaign help, it could be technology companies, it could be fashion companies. We have created last year a collaboration for a 3D printed shoe company. We launched the world's first ready-to-wear designer shoe line that is 3D printed. And it's just an example, you know. So we are here to solve the problem for the fashion designers.
Wonderful.
To get on the guest list for our live events, go to AmericanFashionPodcast.com and look for the live shows link. AFPOD, AFPOD, is our Twitter handle, and I personally am fashion tech guru on just about everything. On Instagram, we are at American Fashion Show. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, there's a Be a Guest form on the AmericanFashionPodcast.com website. For comments, our voicemail line is 646-979-8709. Or email info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com. American Fashion Podcast is produced by Mouth Media Network, which holds the copyright to this and other episodes of the series, all rights reserved. Subsist, friends. Keep making things beautiful. I'm Charles Beckwith, and we'll talk to you again next week.